June 22nd at SOB's 204 Varick Street in Manhattan. Be part of the fun.
The previous program was Advocating for Justice with Arthur Schwartz. Heard Wednesdays at 5 p.m. here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. Now stay tuned for the evening edition of Democracy Now! Following Economic Update with Richard Wolff. It's 6 p.m.
Is Democracy Now!
But the reason I'm here is because these drag bands ain't never been about drag, right? Because these are the same people that are coming for medically necessary gender-affirming care. These are the same people trying to kick our kids out of sports. These are the same people trying to reject HIV funding for this state.
The nation's largest lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer civil rights organization has declared a national state of emergency in the United States due to an unprecedented wave of anti-LGBTQ plus legislation. We'll speak to the president of the Human Rights Campaign, Kelly Robinson. Then to Cornel West. The famed public intellectual has just announced he's running for president to challenge both the Democratic and Republican parties.
In these bleak times, I have decided to run for truth and justice, which takes the form of running for president of the United States as a candidate for the People's Party. I enter in the quest for truth. I enter in the quest for justice. And the presidency is just one vehicle to pursue that truth and justice, what I've been trying to do all of my life.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The largest lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer civil rights organization in the United States has declared its first ever state of emergency due to an unprecedented wave of anti-LGBTQ plus legislation. The Human Rights Campaign says more than 525 anti-LGBTQ state bills have been introduced this year in the 2023 legislative session. Over 70 have become law. In the latest move on Tuesday, Louisiana's Republican-dominated legislature passed a ban on gender-affirming care for most minors, sending the bill to the Democratic governor, who's opposed it, but a GOP supermajority in the legislature could override his veto. Most major medical groups, including the American Medical Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics, support gender-affirming health care for transgender minors and adults. Also Tuesday, a federal judge temporarily blocked Florida's bans on gender transition care for three transgender children amidst ongoing legal challenges. Their families filed a lawsuit arguing the bans are unconstitutional, and the judge agreed they represent, quote, purposeful discrimination against transgenders. Meanwhile, in the Los Angeles suburb of Glendale, police declared an unlawful assembly Tuesday night after more than 500 people protested outside a school board meeting where a vote was scheduled on recognizing June as Pride Month. A physical fight broke out between anti-LGBTQ protesters and LGBTQ supporters, and the brawl was so big it was picked up by a local news traffic cam. This comes as 2024 Republican presidential contender Nikki Haley tried to connect teen girls' suicidal ideation to transgender rights during a CNN town hall Sunday.
The idea that we have biological boys playing in girls' sports, it is the women's issue of our time. My daughter ran track in high school. I don't even know how I would have that conversation with her. How are we supposed to get our girls used to the fact that biological boys are in their locker rooms? And then we wonder why a third of our teenage girls seriously contemplated suicide last year?
A recent report by the Trevor Project, the world's largest suicide prevention and mental health organization for LGBTQ young people, found roughly half of transgender and non-binary young people said they'd seriously considered suicide over the last year. And 30% said laws and policies that target LGBTQ people had worsened their mental health. This is Nebraska State Senator Megan Hunt, whose son is transgender, responding to Republican Governor Jim Pillen after he signed a bill last month that bans gender-affirming treatment for transgender youth. Hunt had joined a months-long filibuster to block the measure.
This person said that they had attempted suicide during this session in Nebraska, a trans person. And I said to them, do not let one of these trash people who I work with be the reason that you're not here. They don't matter. The potential you have for the rest of your life is so much bigger than the damage any of these trash people can do in their little four-year, eight-year term. Senator Kauthus stood up and said that trans kids are suicidal and depressed because they're trans. No, it's because of bullies like her who are trying to legislate their existence and take away the right to be viewed as fully human in our culture and society.
For more, we're joined by Kelly Robinson, president of the Human Rights Campaign, the largest LGBTQ plus civil rights organization in the United States. This is the first time in the 40-year history of your group that you've decided to issue this emergency declaration. Talk about why you did this, Kelly Robinson.
Thank you. You know, we felt like we had a responsibility to do so. I mean, you've laid it out. We've seen unprecedented attacks at the legislative level. We're seeing real life violence impacting our community from California to the one in five of every hate crime being motivated by anti-LGBTQ plus bias. And in this moment, when people are traveling across the country, when they're deciding to move or what schools to go to, we had a responsibility to let people know that one, there's an imminent health and safety crisis facing our community. And two, there's a dizzying patchwork of protections for us and for our families, depending on the state that you're in. This report lays that out and also gives resources on what your rights are and what you can do if you find yourself in one of these hostile states.
Can you talk about what's behind this wave of, and wave doesn't really state it accurately. We're talking about, as you've documented, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bills that have been put forward across the country.
This is political theater. They are doing this to pander to a MAGA Republican base in so many of these states. Look, the majority of people support the LGBTQ plus community. 70% of Americans support the LGBTQ plus community and believe that that legislatures should be standing with our values. One in five of Generation Z identifies as a member of this community. 20 million American adults. This is not an issue of the margins. What we're seeing play out is a loud and vocal minority that is sowing hate and fear against our community because they're not willing to solve the real problems. If they actually cared about the safety of our kids, they would be moving forward legislation to prevent gun violence, the number one killer of our children, not taking away the rights of parents to support our kids and growing into their fullest selves.
Over the weekend, U.S. District Judge Thomas Parker ruled a new Tennessee law restricting drag performances in public was unconstitutional. This is drag performer Cian Howe at a Pride event in Franklin, Tennessee.
Having the answer finally delivered and that breath of fresh air and that weight off our shoulders that it's finally gone, we don't have to worry about it, is lovely. We can breathe easy for the rest of the year. There's still a fight, and we still have to continue fighting. There's still other states that drag is still being criminalized that we still have to work on, but this is definitely a step in the right direction.
And in related news, a federal judge blocked parts of a Florida law banning gender-affirming care for transgender youth. Judge Robert Hinkle asserted gender identity is real, and he ruled in favor of three families with three transgender children who will be allowed to obtain prescription puberty blockers. So there is very bad news, but also good news. And some of these rulings are by Trump-appointed judges.
Yes, that's very true. I mean, that's just showing the extent to which that they are going, how unconstitutional the laws are that they're passing in these states. But the thing that I really want to pull forward is the impact is real. The fact that over 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills have been introduced, even if they don't pass into law, it is having a devastating impact on the safety and well-being of our community. And when you match that with easy access to firearms, with an extreme rhetoric of hate, that's where we're getting these real life outcomes of violence, from kids having increased incidents of mental health crises to real assaults at drag queen story hours or bomb threats on hospitals. That's why this is such a crisis right now, because it's got the legislative impact, the human impact, and then it's creating a culture of fear for our community, because we know they're trying to push us back into the closet right now. And we are doing all that we can to show up in joyful resistance and resilience to make that not the case. Not only for ourselves today, but for every young person that's watching this play out.
So talk about doing this as presidential candidates are coming forward and taking very strong stands against the gay community in the Republican field. Everyone from Governor DeSantis of Florida to the former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. Can you talk about what you hope declaring this national state of emergency, how it will affect the presidential campaign?
You know, I have to say that what I see playing out in the Republican primary is devastating, it's sickening, and it's horrifying. They are pandering, again, to an extremist base and sowing fear against our kids, against our trans children, only for political gain. They know that this isn't where the majority of the country is. They know that we've identified 62 million voters in the country that prioritize LGBTQ plus issues when deciding who to vote for. That's, of course, LGBTQ plus people, but that's also our allies, our friends, our family. We can't allow them to continue this line of attack. And even more so, we've got to bolster up our champions. We've got to make sure that everyone that is a supporter and ally of this community turns into a champion in 2024 to hold the strongest line possible. We can't cede ground to these bullies, especially politically. And at the end of the day, we also have to recognize that this is an intersectional attack. The same people that are coming after gender-affirming care are also attacking our access to abortion. The same people that are trying to outlaw the ability to teach queer theories in schools are trying to ban books and outlaw the ability to teach about Black history. They are launching an attack on all of our communities that is truly a crisis to our democracy.
I wanted to ask you about what's happening in the United States going global, Kelly. In May, the Ugandan president, Yoweri Museveni, signed a sweeping anti-LGBTQ measure into law that makes same-sex relationship punishable by life in prison, even the death penalty in some cases. It's one of the most draconian anti-LGBTQ laws in the world. In April, we spoke to the Ugandan activist Frank Mugisha about the role of U.S. evangelicals in pushing this law forward in Uganda.
The homophobia and transphobia we are seeing towards queer and trans persons in Uganda is from the West. It is mostly peddled by extreme American evangelicals. Just last week, we had American evangelicals in Uganda attending a conference that was titled the Interparliamentary Conference on African Values. But the agenda for this conference was anti-gay and anti-gender. In fact, some of the African members of parliament who attended this conference are trying to introduce similar legislation in other countries. For example, Kenya, a member of parliament who attended this conference in Uganda that was heavily supported by American evangelicals, is now trying to introduce a similar legislation in Kenya. We are seeing this anti-gay propaganda and anti-gay legislations moving around Africa. Ghana already has one. We are worried about other countries like Burundi, Tanzania, that could introduce similar legislations.
So that's Frank Mugisha, the LGBTQ activist in Uganda. So many LGBTQ people are fleeing Uganda right now with the passage and signing of this law, Kelly Robinson. In that conversation, he particularly focused on the American evangelical Scott Lively, who talked about homosexuality as a Western agenda. Can you talk about how what's happening in the United States is having such a massive effect globally?
I mean, it's heartbreaking. It truly is. It is devastating to see how impactful that piece of legislation is in Uganda. And we know that it's true what he's saying, that the same people that are pushing these anti-LGBTQ plus laws in the United States, they are exporting this hate. They are using places like Uganda and the full African region as a testing ground for what they hope to do in the United States of America. These are groups that are designated hate groups like the Alliance to Defend Freedom. This is a true crisis. You know, and it's also heartbreaking because America used to be the beacon of hope. We used to be going to countries talking about what it means to expand rights to people. And now this is the legacy that we're moving forward. All of us need to see this for exactly what it is, a precursor to what they also want to make true in the United States of America.
And finally, Kelly, if you can talk about what you feel people need to do in this time as your organization has designated a national emergency.
I think that we need to recognize that first, there are children looking to us to see what we are going to do and say in this moment, to see if we will stand up for their lives, if we will validate their humanity and their dignity. And all of us have a responsibility to do that vocally and proudly. We have to stand up and tell our stories in every way that we can about being a member of the community or being an ally to this community. You have to take political action, contact your legislatures and tell them not to mess with our trans kids, not to mess with the LGBTQ plus community. And ultimately, we have to vote. We have to change the political dynamics in this country so that it is no longer advantageous for our opposition to attack the LGBTQ plus community. We can get on the other side of this issue, but we've got to do it together.
Well, Kelly Robinson, I thank you so much for being with us, president of the Human Rights Campaign, the nation's largest LGBTQ plus civil rights organization. For the first time in its 40-year history, it has declared a national emergency for the LGBTQ plus community. Well, the 2024 presidential race is becoming more crowded. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and former Vice President Mike Pence have both joined the Republican race. Meanwhile, the philosophy professor and civil rights activist Cornel West has announced he's running for president as a candidate with the People's Party. In a short video released Monday, Dr. West criticized both the Democratic and Republican parties.
We're not talking about hating anybody. We're talking about loving. We're talking about affirming. We're talking about empowering those who have been pushed to the margins. Because neither political party wants to tell the truth about Wall Street, about Ukraine, about the Pentagon, about big tech.
West's announcement surprised many political observers. In 2008, he endorsed Barack Obama, but later became a vocal critic of the Obama-Biden administration. In 2016 and 2020, he backed Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primaries. Cornel West is now running as a member of the People's Party, which was founded by a former staffer of Sanders after the 2016 election as an alternative to the two-party system. This will be the first time the party has fielded a candidate for president. According to the New Republic, the People's Party has ballot access in barely a handful of states. Dr. West is one of the nation's most recognized public intellectuals. He's a professor of philosophy and Christian practice at Union Theological Seminary. He formerly taught at Princeton and Harvard universities. He's joining us now from Irvine, California. Cornel West, welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. Can you talk about why you've decided to run for president of the United States?
First, Sister Amy, I want to salute you. You are an exemplar of longevity, of integrity, and consistency. And, you know, we go back many, many decades. So I just want to always begin on that note. You're putting a smile on Brother George and Sister Dorothy's face, your precious parents. But no, my announcement of running for president of the United States to be head of the empire, to help dismantle it in such a way that poor and working people would be at the very center, at the very core of our vision of what a good society actually is. It has to do, as you can imagine, with these very bleak times, these very desperate times. So it's a kind of act of desperation. You know, I'm 70 years old. I've been at this for 55 years. And I have a calling that flows out of the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. and Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel and Edward Said and Chief Joseph and Dorothy Day and Grace Lee Boggs and Louisa Marino. All of those are the best of America. And I think we're at such a low point that America needs to be reintroduced to its best. And its best has always been the movements for justice, the struggles for freedom, the solidarity based on a fundamental commitment to the dignity of those Sly Stone calls everyday people. And there's no doubt in my mind that the two-party system now is a major impediment for the empowerment of poor and working people. I'm thoroughly convinced that, of course, the neo-fascist Republican Party has already made it very clear that they're tied to big business and big military, big tech, and so forth. And the milquetoast neoliberal Democratic Party strikes me as being incapable of taking seriously the fundamental needs of poor and working people, not just here, but around the world. The militarism abroad, $7 billion frozen for the brothers and sisters in Afghanistan, and what's been AFRICOM in Africa, and what's been going on in the Middle East. Thank God that you keep track of the precious Palestinian brothers and sisters and all the hell that they're catching. You have it every day, and I thank God that you do. Why? Because Palestinian peoples deserve to have a visibility in terms of their suffering and ways in which they can attempt to get out from under. Same would be true, of course, for our Jewish brothers and sisters in Russia or in a France where their rights are being violated. We're wrestling with organized greed. We're wrestling with institutionalized hatred. We saw that with our precious gay brothers and lesbian sisters and queer siblings in the earlier report. But it's also a matter of routinized indifference. There's an indifference to the plight of the vulnerable. More and more, it's becoming not just a fad and a fashion, it's becoming a normalized way of life. And that is what leads toward wholesale fascism, not just here, but in other parts of the world. And we've seen it, of course, in Hungary. You see it. We saw it in Brazil. We can go on and on in this regard. So for me, it's really a matter of trying to be consistent with what I've been about for the last 55 years.
You know, Democracy Now!, we ask very critical questions. I also want to read from a New Republic article about your candidacy and about the People's Party. The article states, quote, "While the party began in 2017 with noble roots to form a new political party independent from corporate money and influence, it's been mired in troubling allegations as well as broader organizational dysfunction. Numerous sources have corroborated sexual harassment allegations against party founder Nick Brana. Last year, former party member Paula Jean Swearingen said she'd witnessed Brana try to force himself onto former party executive director Zana Day, who confirmed the allegations herself. Numerous party board members were apparently forced out for encouraging investigations into the allegations and questioning whether Brana was still fit to lead the party," unquote. Brana has also praised the prominent anti-vaxxer Robert Kennedy Jr., who's also running for president, but as a Democrat. He described Kennedy as a, quote, courageous leader whose environmental and vaccine advocacy has illuminated issues that few dare to confront. So he's the founder of the party that you're running with, the People's Party. Talk about why you chose the People's Party, and if you would like to respond to those allegations. And also the bigger point of why you didn't choose, for example, if you wanted to be outside the race, the Green Party, which has more ballot access, but that's a lot there, Cornell.
Yeah, no, indeed, and I appreciate that question too, my dear sister. I mean, I have a great love for my Green Party brothers and sisters. I've worked twice with them, and so I have nothing against their third party operations. It would be nice if we had even a coming together, but that's something that is for a different show. But in terms of the history of the People's Party, you know, I was there at the founding. There's no doubt about that. And I've been a kind of honorary member of the board, even though I haven't participated. So I haven't followed all of the insides and outsides of what has happened. It strikes me that there's been some very bad and ugly moments. There's no doubt about that. But I don't want to adjudicate as to who actually is guilty or who's actually innocent, because I just don't know. But there has to be accountability, and especially when it comes to sexual harassment in terms of sisters of any color, that those are very, very important issues to wrestle with and very serious charges in that regard. But as I said before, that for me, I wanted to be able to bring a serious critique to bear on the corporate duopoly. And the People's Party, in its inception and in its vision, is a populist one. So you got a number of different voices, heterogeneous. It is very loose. A lot of people say, well, is it an organization at all? I mean, it does anything hold it together and so forth and so on? Well, that we shall see. Those are very important questions. I don't want to act as if they aren't serious challenges. But I think that if we can deliver in such a way that we are treating each and every working person and poor people of any color with great respect in this campaign, if we can raise voices to shape the discourse and dialogue in this campaign, if we can not just bring pressure to bear, but begin to point out that the choice between the neo-fascist brother Trump, criminal in so many ways, and the milquetoast Biden, who's so tied into corporate wealth and corporate power, they can have austerity in the recent debt ceiling agreement and still allowed military expansion, that we might be able to go much further than a lot of people think. But that history, you know, has to be wrestled with. I don't want to downplay that at all. I just hope that we really do keep the focus, though, on what can be done at this particular moment, not to erase the history, but to make sure that as we make history in this moment, that we are doing all and everything we can.
So, Cornel West, what
sure
would you
poor
do?
Poor people and working people are at the center.
And what would you do about immigration rights right now in this country, about reproductive rights right now in this country, and about this incredible threat to the country, the greatest domestic violence threat, which is white supremacy? You were at the Unite the Right rally in Virginia, not participating in it, but there when you saw the neo-Nazis march threatening you.
Absolutely. I mean, Brother Martin used to say that the bombs that we drop abroad land at home. The militarism around the world comes back to haunt us, and we've got police departments that are militarized. You have to break the back of the culture of silence of the police departments that think they can get away with mistreating, brutalizing, sometimes murdering fellow citizens. And as you know, those fellow citizens are disproportionately black and brown, but it includes all colors in terms of police murders every year that the Washington Post and other newspapers keep track of. But you've got to, as a president, you've got to use whatever charisma, whatever language, whatever eloquence you can to try to ensure that you set an atmosphere such that mechanisms of accountability, not just in police departments, but at the workplace. We need workers' control. Rick Wolf and others have talked about, not just at the workplace, but in our cultural life. The organized greed has been on steroids
commodify everything, everything for sale, everybody's for sale. That must be radically called into question. And as a leader, you call forth spiritual awakening, moral reckoning, and try to, in some sense, exemplify that, not just in your policies, you see, but in your tone.
Cornell, we have 10 seconds.
In your vision.
Well, I want to thank you so much.
But immigration, though, you got to treat each immigrant with dignity. Oh, that's the beginning part, but I know we got a long